Morning. So this week we continue our lecture to this chapter about how to manage the risk. And still record, in the first lecture we talk about SDLC, System Life Cycle Development. Any people forgot this? You can raise your hand. Great. So you will have a higher risk in your final evaluation. If you still record the first phase of SDLC, it is investigation, right? So in terms of investigation, we need to clarify our objective, and we need to make a very preliminary analysis of cost and efficiency to compare the two aspects. And after investigation, we have the phase called analysis. So if we take our course, the MT-103 as the projects, so the first lecture, what is information security, is definitely the investigation phase. And why we need it, also you can regard it as investigation. And last week, we talked about the legal aspects and ethical aspects. And this week we'll continue to this risk management aspects. These two chapters, we can call it analysis. So at this phase, you should clarify the situation. You should get the state of art of information security. One of the other very important aspects besides the legal and the ethical is how to manage the risk. So first, I still give you some few examples for better understanding the concept of risk management, and then we jump to the formal definition, what it is, and what are the key steps, for example, the three key steps, risk identification, assessment, and control, under the concept of risk management, and what type of method we can use to make a decision based on the result from these three steps. That is the cost of the benefit analysis. And then we will jump to some other method besides to the easy question I will give it to you. We will learn it. And if we still have time, we will do some exercise, group exercise. We will have some material here, so in the second half of the lecture. So the first example, I give this example in the first lecture. It is about the credit card fraud. And you still record this case. Why credit card companies, they will not spend a lot of money to make each credit card more secure because of the cost. And they have this, for example, each of the credit card, they have this rough estimation of the cost as 7 basic points, which is roughly equal to 0.07 US dollars per 100 US dollar transactions. So this is pretty low. And if we can estimate the average transaction amount per card in the card's life, can I ask how many of you have credit cards? Great. Half of you. And do you think how much money in your credit card, in average? I know some of card you may use it daily. Others, you might use it a couple of times per year. But in average, how much money do you think, how much money in terms of the transactions of credit card, per card, do you think? It is a reasonable amount? Or the question is 10,000 Norwegian krone is a reasonable amount? I believe a lot of cards, they are just silent card, not much more than this. Okay, then we use the equation and we can calculate the cost. If we want to mitigate the cost, then the average fraud cost per card can be estimated as 7 Norwegian krone, and the question will be any security mechanism, they have a cost per card less than this 7 Norwegian crown. For example, if you have more secure controls like a smart card, we already have a smart card, of course, or a biometric chip, you really need to think about this question. And this is where the risk assessment and the cost-benefit analysis is needed. So for one aspect, you have risk. On the other aspects, you have cost. You have your fixed budget, whether you should use this budget to increase the security level, then you need to think about and make a decision. Of course, this estimation, this is a direct cost. You may also need to consider other indirect costs like the reputation of your organization if you just ignore the complaint from the customer, or the cost of the subsequent lawsuits. Another example. And I read this news middle of last year. It's about the Brussels airport terrorist attack. I believe most of you know that, right? From last year, around March. Actually, right after March, I had a business trip with the Brussels, and I have a personal experience. They established a security control, physical security control, between the airport and the railway station. If you visit the airport in Brussels, you know the two parts are actually connected, but they physically establish a security control procedure there, and this caused a long line. And averagely, my observation is the passenger will wait 10 or 20 minutes, depends how many people there, in line to go through all this security control. And there were four or five full-armed soldiers there watching every people. And also besides, you find five or six people or just working staff there to help you, the passengers, to go through the procedure. And you can estimate the cost. And this measure was taken right after the attack. And on this date, roughly 3 months later, they revoked this. But all these costs brought by the security guard are expected to reduce the level, risk level, to a low level, right? From high to low. So the thing is, when you make a decision, whether you should use the more money or allocate more budget to enhance the protection level on some specific target, you always need to weigh whether it is worse. And in this case, of course, terrorist attack, it is a big threat causing a lot of cost, human cost, money cost, time cost. And all these security guards or measure, they should be in place and in that very critical time. The key issues, how to manage this risk. We can see from these two examples, a good way, or say a typical way, is if you want to reduce the risk, you should spend more money, usually, right, to enhance your security control. And then we might have go to more detailed questions, for example, in which aspects we need to spend this budget. And on each aspect, how much money are you going to plan to invest on? And how you prioritize all these different threats and the risks. So which threat should be number one on top threat on the top on the list, and which are the second, and so on. And finally, you also need to think about whether you can come up with efficient and effective solutions we call the security control. And how much money do you want to spend to secure such security control? So you see, to manage the risk, it is a series of actions and decisions you need to make. So it is not just a very pure technical issue, not a mathematical issue solely. And before we jump to the formal definition, what is risk management? First, we need to figure out the two simple questions: how to calculate the risk, and what is the cost-benefit analysis? How to do that? So here, this is a very simple equation to calculate risk. Equation is simple. Two variables to calculate risk: frequency of the incident, and also the impact. Of course, you can say likelihood. Likelihood is the probability. If you already observe within a long time, a fixed time frame, then you get some statistics of the frequency. And the other term concept is the CBA, cost-benefit analysis. So it is equal to the reduced loss minus the cost of security controls. So I have to weigh these two parts. Whether the risk reduced from your risk management measurement and also the risk control can be equivalent or even bigger than the cost of the security control. If it is bigger, that means the security control is meaningful. You have less money and you have more gain. If the result of the CBA is a negative value, then you need to consider whether it is worth to adopt more security controls to mitigate this risk. So now we jump to the formal definition. What is risk management? We call it, it is a process of identifying the risk. So first you need to identify it. Assess its relevant magnitude and the frequency. So these two aspects, frequency and magnitude. This is the second phase we call the risk assessment. And then you need to think about how to take steps to reduce it to acceptable level. So take steps is the third step of risk management. We call it the risk control. So clearly you see the first step, identification. The second step, assessment. The final step, based on the result of assessment, you need to think about the steps to take, that is risk control. And the target. The target is also worth of your attention. We say to reduce the risk to an acceptable level. And in most cases, you should not have the luxury go to say we want to reduce the risk to a zero or to completely eliminate. In most of cases, it's not practical. As long as the risk is under the threshold, you can allow that happen. It brings less impact on your organization, then you can accept it. So the three steps, very important. So memorize them in your mind. And go to details. Risk identification, that is enumeration and documentation of the risk to your organization's information assets. Today we talk about information security, so the risk identification we limit it to the information assets here, these aspects. Risk assessment, it is a process to determine the extent to which organization's information assets are opposed to the risk. So, simply to say, you need to generate some quantified results or numbers for you to make a decision. Risk control, applying controls to reduce the risk to an organization's data and information system to an acceptable level. Also memorize this key term, acceptable level. And our textbook also gives some details, the workflows, how to do the three steps. For example, for the first step, risk identification, first you should identify and do inventory of your information assets. Inventory is also very important because first you need to figure out, need to crystally clear what assets do you have. Otherwise, you might have forgot some assets which may be used or utilized by the attacker to launch attack to you. And then you classify the sets. Classify means you, for example, you give some classification labels. What is confidential, what is sensitive, what is internal, what could be public information. Then according this to these different classification labels, you can assign different protection resource to risk control step. And finally, you prioritize all these threats. So that is the three sub-steps. As the result, if you already know what do you have, what your information assets are, and what could be the external threats, then the second step, your first sub-step for risk assessment is you should establish a mapping between the threats. Threats is from outside. And with your information assets. That was from your internal aspects. You establish this mapping and to figure out, to think whether such each threat will generate valid impact on your each different items of information assets. That is the first sub-step, and the second sub-step will be you calculate them, say quantify the risk. We will address this by some examples later in this lecture. And finally, if you get some numbers, you have quantified the result, what different type of risk they are, you can think about the risk control. First, select strategy and justify the different technical solutions or procedural solutions. And finally, consider how to do the implementation. Before we go to the examples, how to calculate, how to quantify this risk, our textbook gave a sentence. It's a citation from Sun Zi, who was he's an artist of war. He had a very famous book in China, in ancient China, 2500 years ago. If we read this sentence, which clearly to convey the idea what could be a successful risk management procedure. If you know your enemy and know yourself, you will not be imperiled in 100 battles. If you do not know your enemy but know yourself, you win one battle and lose one, so half and half. Of course, if you do not both, then you will be imperiled in every single battle. So here, knowing yourself, that is to clarify what information assets do you have. So we can use inventory, a good inventory process to achieve this. And also to figure out what could be the vulnerability associated with each information asset in your organization. And knowing your LMA, that means you need to figure out the threats from the external aspects. Of course, we can find other sentences, very famous one as well. For example, this one, to fight and to conquer in all your battles is not the supreme excellence. The supreme excellence is to win without fighting. So how to understand this sentence, to win without fighting? So basically, you can imagine the war is a game. between you and the enemy, and in information security, it is a game between the defender and the attacker. If the defender can make sure or to make the attacker aware that they have no chance to win, then the defender can win without any cost or launch a really a real war, right? So it looks like a idea of risk analysis based on game theory. Another sentence. Victorious warriors win first and then go to the war, while the defeated warriors go to the war first and then seek to win. So this is also a very good idea, very similar to the principle of the preparation phase. If you are going to defend your information assets, that is also why we need risk management. So first you need to figure out the risk, and then you are well prepared for the protection of your assets. You have everything under your control. Okay, we jump to the detail of the first step, risk management. As I mentioned, risk management, the risk identification. This is the first step. Risk identification begins with the first step inventory, which is to identify, classify, and prioritize the organization's assets. And then you need to assess the vulnerability, which identify or quantify the vulnerabilities facing each asset. So first you have a list of assets, and then you consider for each item of the assets what could be the vulnerability. And of course, we consider different aspects like people, procedure, data, software, and hardware. And our textbook is the details how to understand of each different items. For example, if we talk about people, we have different categories of people like employees, non-employees. Even for employees, like could be some trusted employee. Others could be just contracted employee. They just come here for the project, and after project they go. And for non-employees, they could be, for example, your customer, and also could be some trusted organizations. If you do not know a person, but if you trust the organization the person is associate, then you also gain some trust, right? Customers and others like strangers, including potential attackers. Procedures, for example, we have procedures addressing the IT and the business standard, also to address some more sensitive information security assets. And data we say, for example, the data at rest, that is the data in storage, data in under the processing in the memory of the computer system, for example, or data in transmission, transmitted via network or different transmission channels. And this is a good example how you can list the details, what type of information assets list here, and what could be the different subcategories, and for each different subcategories they may have different risk or vulnerability. Also, our textbook adds a standard, very basic process how to do this risk identification. For example, the first step to plan and organize the process, category the system, do inventory, classify the assets, identify the, and also prioritize the assets, and specific assets vulnerabilities. Of course, you might see this backward arrow. So that means in each phase, you might get some new knowledge, a new experience, and then you can modify and do a refinement of the previous phase. This looks also similar to the idea of this SDLC. So the another concept we need to know is besides inventory, you also need to think about the classification of your information assets. And our textbook recommends these two types of basic method how to do this. For example, the three-level classification method. we classify all the data into all the information assets into confidential, internal, and external. Confidential, of course, that is the topmost level in this model, and internal, they might be not be confidential, but you might want to limit the scope of the receiver to access this information. Or some information can be public, we call it external. Another model is it is used by U.S. Ministry Classification Scheme, we call it the five-level classification, like top secret, secret, confidential, sensitive, but not classified, or unclassified. In principle, the idea is very similar, but sometimes you need this coarse levels, sometimes you need this refined levels. But one thing you need to memorize, it is always information owners, they are responsible for classifying these information sets. And the information classification must be revealed periodically. So for example, you cannot just keep this label, confidential or top secret, forever. Normally, for most of the case, you should set up a limit, for example, 3 years or 5 years, 10 years, or in extremely case, it could be half a century. And also, from time to time, you need to assess the levels and the labels for each of your information sets and make some adjustment. Each user assigned with a single level of authorization, indicating the classification level. Yes, that means each employee in your organization, they should not be assigned with two different levels. That could be leading to a lot of confusion in practice. So one person with just unique one label. And also a very important principle we call need to know. Each employee, they must meet this requirement, need to know. What does this mean? That means you should know what you are supposed to know, not more than that. So just need to know. So this is a very conservative attitude towards the information classification. Another concept, information assets valuation. So in this case, as a information asset owner, you should think about the questions. Is most critical to, is this asset most critical to your organization's business success? And which assets they generate the most revenue for your organization? And which assets would be the most expensive if they are attacked and failed, you have to find another alternative to replace it. And which assets would be the most embarrassing or cause greatest liability or, say, public reputation damage if they are breached. So they are very typical questions for you to help you to evaluate or to assign a value to each item of your information asset. To better understand all these concepts, I know I have several slides full of text and concept how to understand it in a better way. For example, we can have this a small exercise. Let's suppose the application background is a e-health service. In Norway, we have very good, relevantly very good infrastructure in terms of e-health. We have this Health Nok portal, so each patient, they can use their credential to access the different information, different patient data, and also the prescriptions, other critical sickness information from this portal about the patient themselves. And suppose in the future, private e-health service can be established to profit from selling the health advice to patients based on the health data collected from the patient themselves. So that means the patient can share the data with this business, this company. The company is using artificial intelligence, machine intelligence algorithms to generate useful information, which can be very helpful as advice to the patient. And in this case, if you are the owner of this business, think about the risk, how to manage this risk. So this is a good example. And to put it into practice, our textbook suggests 4 tables. Also, in the next half of this lecture, you will have this exercise. But here we can go through it together, for example. The first worksheet, the first table, we call it inventory worksheet. As we already mentioned, the first step to do to make an inventory of all of your information assets. And I just put some examples here. For example, what type of information assets do you have relevant to this business goal? Patient health data, for example. This is very valuable assets. You collect it from your customer. And also patient ID. The patient need their ID to access their data because we, according to GDPR, the patient have the right to access, right? The web server, of course. The web server, the backend, or the communication channel, where which the patient can send a request and retrieve their data, where a secure protocol, for example, SSL or TLS. And then we need to make a table or assign a label of classification, for example, confidential, internal, external, to each of these information sets. For example, for patient health data, we say this should be confidential, right? And if the patient health data is breached, then the impact on your business will be huge, right? Because you will have more competitors in the worst case, and also your customer will file a lot of complaints and even lawsuits against you. So the impact is high. And for example, another aspect is a web server homepage. It is public, it is should be facing the general public, so it is external in classification label. But what could be the impact if the homepage was hacked, for example, on some day? It is high or medium or low? Okay. Yeah, it depends. Depends on what type of exploit or the tools, hacking tools they use. Use a lot of the ones the tools like a cross-site scripting or the yeah, that is true. So here we so in this case, yes. Yes. So it real depends on different aspects. The first aspect is what type of attack the attacker can use. For example, if it is the advanced attack, it will use some malware embedded on web page and attract the personal information from customers. Definitely, the impact to the business will be medium or even high. But if the attack is limited to the modification of a web page, then the impact to the core business is very limited. Then we say it is low, right? So it depends on different case. Then the next step, after we figure out the possible vulnerabilities And we have an inventory result of our information sets. We can think about how to rank all these vulnerabilities and values, create weights for each category. And then we have these three aspects, for example, to consider the revenue, profitability, and the public image. All of the three are just examples. They are elements, they are factors that can affect or generate impact on your business objective. And for each these different aspects or factors, you may calculate a relative importance, like, for example, a score between 0 and 1. And then you list the assets in order of these different importance, or say you rank them in order. And then we get the second table. We call it a weighted factor analysis worksheet. As I mentioned, we take the three criteria, three aspects: revenue, profitability, and the public image. And you can, for example, assign a number between 1 and 100. The higher is the value, the higher is the importance in your mind of this specific criteria. And in this case, let's say we think the impact on revenue, the importance is 20 in the score. And for the other two aspects, 40 each. And for the healthcare data, if there is a breach of this health data, then the impact on the revenue, for example, we say the score will be 0.5, and the profitability could be higher. I, for example, put 0.8 here. Why? Because the health data collected from your customer, they are really valuable. They are really the data based on which you get the data analysis result. If they are leaked, then you don't have a competition edge, right? And also your business can be compromised by lawsuits and other threats. And the public image impact, of course, let's say, will be very high as well. Let's think about another type of data, patient ID. And if the patient ID is breached, the impact on the revenue could be even higher. Because in this case, you lose the confidence, you lose the trust from a customer. And then it will be a hindrance for you to broaden, to widen your market. But because the data leaked, it is not your core business data. So the impact on the profitability or the functionality in terms of data analysis is very limited in this case, for example, in my opinion. And the public image, of course, it is heavily damaged in this case. If even the customer ID was theft and the imposters can log in and get their old data. So this is important in terms of the public reputation. And then finally, you will get some weighted score. So the weighted score will be the score you assigned, the importance score you assigned to each criterion, multiplied with the importance of the criterion itself. And then you sum up all of these three results into one score. So here, for example, we have 0.5 associated with the first criterion. Then we multiply it with the weight, 20, 0.8, 40, and 0.5. Associated with the third aspect, 40. Finally, we get this number. So this number is a indicator of this risk associated with this specific information set. So this is a second table, and when we doing identification and ranking the threats, we also need to ask ourselves several other questions. For example, which threats present the danger to the sets? Which threats represent the most danger to the information? How much would it cost to recover from attack? Which threat requires greatest expenditure to prevent? And get more details from our textbook. And from our textbook, they list the different threats and give some examples here. And in the next half, you can also take this table as a reference. You may think about in this specific case whether these different threats, they are valid. And if they are valid, and to which degree they are important. And again, before we go to the calculation of the examples, we need to consider the vulnerability. So now we have the inventory results. We have in our mind the list of information assets. And we calculated the risk, and the risk there also depends really on whether the vulnerability they are valid or not. For example, in this case, if we have this plain text health record stored in database, yes, it is itself it is a vulnerability. But as I mentioned, we need to establish a mapping between vulnerability and the threats. And threats depends on the concrete settings of your IT in your organization. And for example, in this case, the plain text healthcare, this vulnerability, it makes a real vulnerability under the case if they are connected to network. And network have some attacking surface exposed to attacker from outside. And if this is another case, for example, if a database is strongly protected with access control and without a direct connection to the external or public domain, then this might not be a valid vulnerability. And then you need to examine how each threat could be perpetrated and list organizations assets vulnerabilities into one threat vulnerability assets table together. Still recall this important equation, how to calculate the risk. We have the two variables, likelihood and the impact. And the likelihood means the probability that the vulnerability will be under a successful attack. If the vulnerability exists there and the attacker cannot make a successful attack, then we should not count it into this statistics of likelihood in this case. And then we assigned a numeric value, the number between 0 and 1. I already explained this in the previous case example. So this is the way we do the second step, risk assessment. So just now we know the steps, how to do the identification of the risk. Now we consider how to really calculate the numbers. Then we rank the vulnerabilities into this third table. We call the ranked vulnerability risk worksheet. We rank it by this risk scores. In the previous table, we have these numbers, this impact numbers. For example, 6.2 generated here. And we can use this number to model this impact aspects. Then we need to think about how to calculate the likelihood aspects. And in a simple way, if the attack happened a lot or frequently, you can generate statistics very easily, right? You have a observation of different type of attacks in a fixed time frame, and you generate this number. And in some cases, it might not be the case, because the attack would be, for example, 0 day. You didn't have this experience before, or the attack, the frequency could be very low, happened once many years, per many years. So it really depends on the type of the threats. And the final step, the third step, after we get this risk scores, we can consider different risk control. And one of the five strategies are recommended from our textbook. For example, if you are facing the risk scores, what type of solutions can you come up? First, of course, defend. You can choose to defend. You can choose to eliminate the threats, or to enhance the defense. Or transfer. The second strategy is transfer. You transfer the liability or the cost or the responsibility to a third party, for example, by buying an insurance, or outsource this information security protection to another external professional. Or you establish agreement with a technology providers, and they can provide you some information security controls to help you to mitigate all these different type of risk. Mitigation. For example, you come up with some plan of incident response, disasters, recovery, and the business continuity. Or you just accept the risk. If the risk you estimate the impact is not so high, and your business objective will not be seriously impacted. Or if you think the risk is very high, you may reconsider your business objective. You may choose to just stop your business, terminate it. Our textbook gave a detailed process how to do the whole process of risk control. First, from our internal aspects, we need this system functionality design and the information security control design. And we think the system vulnerable to some threats. We make some decision. If it is yes, we will ask our question. The question is: the system exploitable? So we have vulnerability, but if the vulnerability is valid, it depends on whether it can be exploited by the attacker. If it is yes, then we say the vulnerability really exists, and we consider different threats, and we multiply these two aspects, two variables, and we generate the risk score. Then we evaluate the risk score to make a decision. If, for example, the attacker scan is larger than the cost, if it is yes, attacker will have more motivation to launch attack, then you will consider if the loss caused by attack can be acceptable. If it is no, or in here, then you have to consider risk control or to mitigation process. If the expected loss is larger, yes, you have to do that. Risk is acceptable, then you just accept the risk. Another term, cost-benefit analysis. We have several equations here, but I think the most important one, the CBA. We have here ALOE prior minus ALOE post minus ACS. So ALOE prior, that means analyze the loss expectancy of the risk before implementation of risk control. That means the estimation of the risk before you put any risk control into practice. And then the ALOE post, that is the re-estimate risk. After you enact or you take into effect your risk controls. So the result of these two variables, that means the reduction, the to which degree you reduce the risk. And then you compare the reduction of the risk to the annualized cost of the guard. If the risk is higher and the cost is lower, then it could be very worse for you to deploy this risk control. So this is a very simple equation to how to help you to make a decision whether you want to put the risk control into practice or not. Okay, we can have a short break, 5 minutes, and then we can think about. During the break, if you want to think about whether we have some drawback or shortcomings if we use this simple equation to estimate risk. And also, you can take one manual, how to do the risk management score calculation, the other exercise sheet. Okay, we continue our lecture. Any people have any answer to my question? Do you identify any weakness or drawback about this equation if we want to use it for estimating a risk? What type of weakness can be with the use of this equation? Yes. So this is one big question. If we do not know this aspect, but we can generate statistics if we observe the incidence for example, 1 year or several years, then we can generate statistics. The thing is, the challenge is not every type of attack they can happen every year, right? So sometimes it's very hard to generate statistics with it. Yes, this is a good point as well. So we called so the first drawback likelihood, for example, very low frequency, it's very hard to estimate this within a very short time. And then we have to multiple objectives. Sometimes the different objectives or protection goals of different information sets, they are conflict to each other. And yes, so not always easy to estimate those parameters, and sometimes even not possible to estimate some accidents. We call it a black swan. I believe you know that. A lot of accidents we call it a black swan just because it's really a type of rare accidents. No people can really predict them to happen in a specific time. But if you look at them from backward way, sometimes you have a good explanation why they can happen. But this is not always easy to predict them to happen. For example, the internet invention, the invention of internet, invention of a personal computer, the first World War, dissolution of Soviet Union, 9/11 attack, Oslo attack. Because it is hard to predict, so basically it's not reasonable to calculate, estimate the likelihood in this case. Other researchers propose the more better models, or say alternative models, to replace some part or some variables, for example, to how to replace this likelihood to address the threat of black swan accidents. And here, I recommend, if you have time, to read about this PhD thesis. Lisa was a PhD with us 3 years ago, I think, here in this lab. And she modeled the likelihood by another aspect, for example, the human incentive. That is relevant to what you mentioned, the incentive. So different people, they have different incentive. You have to think about what is the incentive of a potential attacker. And that could be another dimension to replace, or at least to augment to this parameters of likelihood. Another interesting aspect I want to talk with you is you have to pay attention to the correlation and dependencies among different risk factors. For example, if we assume if you have already a full list of your information assets and you calculate the risk scores for each of them. However, it is not always you can treat each of the risk scores separately, independently, because a lot of parameters, they are correlated. In this case, for example, if we want to ensure the data availability of a hospital or any general service provided to customer, we can have, for example, two types of risk factors. The first type of the risk factor is the private cloud. Down. If the service providers they use the private cloud to make a backup of the data, just in case there are operational servers down, right? And another risk is the servers. The server itself may not working. And if we assign the likelihood 1% to each of these two risk factors, then we might calculate the likelihood of the data unavailability by multiply these two, right? If they are independent, we can really multiply these two. So we get an even smaller chance for the failure of the data services. But this is the question. Can we simply to assume these two risk factors, they are not correlated? They are not dependent on each other. For example, if we think of power outage, or sometimes an advanced cyber attack, they may affect both of them, right? In this case, they have very high correlation between these two risk factors. So you cannot simply to assume that the chance is just multiplication of these two factors. Another example. For example, nowadays we use a lot of, we call the two-factor user authentication. And some of the two-factor authentication method is similar to B, but actually not. For example, I found this Yahoo email. You have this app installed on your smartphone. If you log in the Yahoo email account while your laptop, you will receive a message and you give a confirmation of that message. Or type the code suggested by the app. Then you go to yourself, identity authenticated. And in this case, in Simile, we have two factors. The first factor is the smartphone itself, right? The second factor is the one-time password usually sent from the server, from the server of Yahoo email account to your smartphone. So two factors. One is something you know, the password, the one-time password. The other thing is the something you have, the smartphone. But actually, you can see the one-time password. In this case, they send directly to a smartphone. If the phone is lost or stolen, actually, the likelihood of one-time password inception is not longer very low probability. But we have a very high chance they has been accepted if the smartphone has been in the hand of attacker. So in this case, the likelihood estimation is actually wrong in this case, because the interception of the one-time password is highly dependent on the phone theft. I think this is very easy to understand, right? But not always, if we put this idea into practice, this is a good lesson. Long-term capital management, it was a company. I didn't know this accident before I make this slide. I just need to find some case for us to better understand this point, and then I found this. It was an American company. It is a hedge fund. So they do different investment in different places on this planet. And you can see their value curve. In the first several years, they are superstars in Wall Street. So they earned a lot of money, get a very good trend of development. And within several months, the value dropped sharply. So what happened? So first we can take a look what happened in the first several years. They get excellent performance in well their investment in different countries. And they always persuade their customers, say that we distribute our risk on different areas of this planet. For example, we have investment in Russia. We have investment in South Asia. So if we assume some bad thing happened in Russia, let's say the probability is 10%, then we might still get some gain from South Asia, right? And then the likelihood of the total loss from the investment is very low. It is a multiplication of the two probabilities. It could be just 1%. So a lot of customers, they are convinced by this argument. So they think the risk distribution, yes, this is a good strategy, but the real situation is they lost $4.6 billion just within 4 months. The reason is these two factors, they were actually closely correlated. You can now see some financial crisis happened in Russia, and they can be kept just within Russia, right? The countries on this planet, they are interconnected into each other, and the one risk from one single country, they can be a global risk to other countries as well. So this is a good lesson we learned from risk management, how you can consider that the independence, the correlations among different risk factors when you are going to estimate the risk. And of course, besides the simple equations to calculate the risk, we can have other methods. Benchmarking, it is another method. Benchmarking means we can look at how other people, they cope with risk management. Then we can just copy and use, right? This is a very simple way. We can just duplicate the effort, invest by our competition peers. And basically, if we want to compare the practice, because first you investigate how other are doing, are coping with the risk management issue, and what could be their practice. Then you can compare what could be the best suited one for you, for your organization. Then we think about the two measures to make a decision. The first measures is we call the metrics-based measures. That is really target-oriented. For example, if the policy, the security policy of your competitor, they have a list, objectives of information security. They say, if we can meet all this list of objectives, then we can ensure the risk can be well mitigated, right? This is one way. We call it a metric-based measure. The other way is the process-based measure. That means you focus on the process. For example, you clearly define or specify what could be a secure process for all of your employees to operate in their daily business. Then we can say if all the employees, they respect the secure procedures, the security policies, then we have higher chance that all the risk can be well mitigated. So these are the two measures we can typically use to compare different type of practice when we make a decision which type of practice we can use. And best practice are those security efforts that are among the best in the industry. So they are They could be standard defect. They are popularly used by big industry, your colleagues or not colleagues, your competitors, your peer, partners in the field. And when consider the best practice for adoption in a specific organization, for example, whether they are suitable for your organization, you also need to consider, for example, does your organization resemble the identified target with the best practice? That means, is your organization looking like the organization you get this best practice from? And are resources at hand similar? You have similar resource to deploy security controls as your competitors? Is your organization in a similar threat environment? Are you facing the similar threats from the business sector or not? When you clarify all these questions, you may make a decision whether you can use the best practice you borrowed, you copied from another peer competitor or not. And also problems with benchmarking and practice, we need to consider the weakness of this method, including the organizations, they don't talk to each other, for example. Normally, people want to talk about their good experience. They show off their good experience, but try to avoid to talk about their weakness and the bad lessons. So this hindered usually the mutual understanding and the idea exchange among the peers. And also, you realize no two organizations, they are exactly the same. And the best practice, they are moving targets. It's a dynamic concept. From time to time, you need to adjust the policies, adjust the definitions in the best practice. You need to also adjust the risk controls. And also knowing what is going on in the past, that's not necessary to mean you know exactly what happened in the future. Of course, this is also easy to understand. Before we start this group access, we can have this two concepts memorized in our mind. The risk appetite, that means the quantity and the nature of the risk that one organization they are willing to accept as a trade-off between the perfect security and the unlimited accessibility. So that means how much risk do you want to undertake? So each organization, when they doing risk management, when they have a concrete risk scores, then before they make a decision, they should think about this. To which degree do you want to accept the risk? And also the another term we call residual risk. That always means in most of cases, you cannot just eliminate all the risk. You cannot put your risk, reduce the risk from high level to zero level. And you have to think about the residual risk. What type of risk is still left? It also depends on your protection objective. We have different protection objectives. In different levels. For example, if you are just want to enhance the security of your beverage vendor machine, then you might think the protection objective is just middle or low level. It is sufficient for you to maintain the business, right? If you are processing highly sensitive data, you might demand a higher protection objective. Depends on the difference of this different business objective, then you might consider different type of attack. For example, we mentioned a smart card. It should be secure enough for normal use, for your credit card, for your employee card here, if we have a smart card. But if you think the threat can be advanced ones, like a sidechannel attack. Anyone knows this type of attack, sidechannel attack? Oh, that is a type of attack. We will mention this in a later lectures on physical security. That is a type of attack. You can use electromagnetic sensors to get the physical signal statistics. Then you can get some hints what is going on inside the smart card or a chip. So there could be some information leakage from the chip by this way. But usually, people, if you just want to maintain your normal business goal, you will not consider this because this is even higher protection objective. You might need more security controls. You might need to hire a budget to cope with such a type of attack. Okay, in the remaining 25 minutes, we can try this group exercise. So I suppose all of you have this manual. This is actually extraction, several slides extracted from this lecture. So it will guide you how to calculate the numbers for each different tables. So recall we mentioned the four tables, right? So the first table, you do an inventory of all your information assets. By the second table, you calculate this weighted factors. That is contributing to the impact aspect. And by the third table, you prioritize vulnerabilities, and you generate the risk scores. And here, the likelihood, you have to estimate it by yourself according to your experience. And the final table, the first table will be, I didn't put it here, but you can see from this exercise sheet, you can come up with potential solutions, how to cope with all of these identified risks. And you can use 20 minutes. In the last 5 minutes, we can quickly compare, for example, two groups' work results. And all of you, we can give your opinions, which options could be better. Okay? So if you have any questions, at any time, you can come up here. And we can discuss. And if you feel here, it's just not easy to form a group, you can also choose another room or another space to do the work. the lipid.
Revenue.
It's just a short explanation of those three criterions: revenue, profitability, and the public image. The difference between revenue and profitability, I believe you should know. The revenue is how much money you can earn in total, the gross income, right? This revenue didn't consider the cost. Profitability, that means the revenue, you can easily to understand it as revenue minus the cost. So the revenue means the market usually. For example, how many customers, how large is the market you are facing. But a large market does not necessarily to mean a good profitability, right? So that could be some difference here. And I leave a lot of blanks on these tables. That means you can also add information assets here besides the five ones, the four ones I listed here. You think other assets, they matters to your business, you can also add them here. Okay. Any of you finish the work and want to volunteer to your work for a short discussion? You need more time? Or? Okay. Then another couple of minutes? Okay. I don't think we have sufficient time today, so just try to finish your group exercise within today before you leave this room, and send me the hard copy, and I can use a few minutes in the next lecture to compare the result. Okay? Okay. Yes, I can expand this to all. Thank you, Dennis, for the good question. And I just explained this a little bit. What is the difference between the patient health data and the web service patient request of retrieving all data? So these, they are really patient data. Here, the patient request of retrieving all data. That means you should establish a web server and communication channel between the patient and your business server so that the patient can send their data to you and also retrieve their data back. So it is an infrastructure communication channel. Okay, that's it. Okay, if you finish your work and give it to me, then we can have a short session next time to have a short discussion on that. So this concludes the lecture today.